Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy football, and I'm joined by the early bird again. It's only just after 5 a.m. in Canada, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, good morning.
How you doing?
Well, I'm all right. How are you doing? 5 o'clock in the morning.
I'm doing great, man. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, and I can't even get into my coffee shop for another half hour yet, Neil. So I'm sitting outside the coffee shop waiting for him to let me in the door so I can get a little coffee and we can talk ball this morning.
I don't think I've ever worked with a caffeine-free Jeff Reinbold. I'm a bit worried. You're always caffeinated.
A caffeine-free one would be a bit worse if I was ever that way. So I can get a little grumpy until I get my coffee sometime.
All right, I'll be careful. I'll be careful not to push your buttons. Let's start with the news that looks like Deflategate is finally over, Jeff. So Tom Brady is going to accept that four-game suspension. This dates back all the way back to the end of the 2014 season, that AFC Championship game against Indianapolis. It's been a while, but I don't really want to get into all the legal stuff again. It's kind of boring at this stage, Jeff. So why don't we just look at it from the next stage, which is Jimmy Garoppolo, how they deal with Jimmy, who's the backup, now going into being the starter for the first 4 weeks of the season. We'll talk about the first 4 weeks of the season in a moment. But first, how do you handle the dividing of snaps during training camp?
Well, I think when you look at this thing right now, they've got to get him ready to play. So obviously Brady will, you know, get his snaps in camp, but the focus now has to shift to Garoppolo because Garoppolo is going to be the quarterback for the first 4 weeks, and they know that going in. It's actually been something that they've addressed in mini camp and OTAs, Neil, in terms of, you know, what are we going to the Patriots are a great organization, and there's not going to be a knee-jerk reaction. They have a strategy in place to how they want to handle this transition for these four games. If Garoppolo can be 3-1 or even 2-2 coming out of those first four, they got to feel pretty good about themselves because there's some tough games in there. They got Arizona and Texas, the Texans in there in the first 4 weeks. So it's going to be interesting, but, you know, this is full speed ahead. He's the guy right now, and Tom's going to have to take a little bit of a step back.
Yeah, and you mentioned the four games, Jeff. So here are the opening four games for New England in 2016. They start on Sunday Night Football at Arizona. Then they've got three home games. And I was listening to some American radio stations, Jeff, over the weekend, and they were saying, well, New England will be happy about the fact they've got three very winnable games, but I think they are three home games, but they're against some pretty tough defenses. They're playing Miami, then they're playing Houston, and then they're playing the Buffalo Bills. And we have to assume that Buffalo will be better on defense than they were a year ago with Rex Ryan at the helm. So it's going to be a tough start, I think.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. And you mentioned Arizona. That game at Arizona, you know, Arizona coming off a bitter, bitter loss in the playoffs last year, but a very talented football team. And they went out and helped themselves in the offseason. And then the Texans, as you mentioned, have a great defense. And they feel like, you know, with Osweiler there at quarterback now, they've kind of answered that question. So those are two right out the gate that you talk about. And then the Dolphins will be better. We can, you know, we're going to talk about the Foster signing and what that means to them. And the Bills, you know, that's a rivalry game in the division. You know, those are not walks in the park by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, the Patriots have got to get out of that thing 2-2. If they get out of it 2-2, I think they're in good shape. If they go 1-3, it's a tough. You're talking about a hole you got to dig yourself out of now.
Absolutely. We're going to go through some other bits of news. It was a busy week in the NFL at what is normally a quiet time, but we were up to the deadline for the franchise tag. So we'll go through our news this week, and then we'll take your questions in the mailbag. Although at the moment, Jeff, the battery on my phone has died, and I can't get on the internet in the NFL office. So I'm hoping that there's some kind of divine miracle in the next 25 minutes so I can access our questions. But you mentioned Arian Foster. 1 year deal with the Miami Dolphins. It was for $1.5 million, potential for another $2 million in incentives. So this is a a proven running back, an exciting running back, Jeff, who's pretty much done everything you would want a starter to do, you know, produced 1,000-yard seasons, Pro Bowl running back, but he turns 30 this coming season. He tore his Achilles tendon last October. The year before that, he had 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns. So good move, bad move, desperate move? What do you think of this?
Well, I think it's a good move. And if you look at the way it plays out, you know, he's got $400,000 of guaranteed money, that signing bonus money that, you know, will have to go against the cap regardless. But they could cut him in training camp and not be on the hook for any more money. Yeah. So I think it's a great move. I think here, you just, as you said, Neil, here's a proven commodity. He does have the issue with the Achilles, but, you know, the way they, these guys take care of themselves now and the rehab help and all that, you know, you can see a guy come off of an injury like this now where maybe 10 years ago it would be, especially at 30 years old, it would be tough. I think it gives them depth at running back. It gives them, you know, a guy that's been there, done that. And certainly, you know, with young Jay Ajayi, it's settles down the running back position and gives the Dolphins another weapon. I think it's a great signing.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad move for Jay if we look at it from a British point of view, because Jay's a very physical runner, Jeff, and, you know, that style. Miami liked that last year. I think he'll have an expanded role this season, but you can only take so many hits and pounding, and it's not like Miami have suddenly done an about turn and tried to find another running back. They were pushing heavily to get CJ Anderson away from the Denver Broncos, and Denver matched that offer sheet. So I think Jay's still going to get his carries. I still think he's going to be a key player for the Dolphins. We're just going to see Miami attacking defenses with two different types of running backs.
I agree with you, Neil. I think that's the mode that most teams in the NFL follow, is that it's backed by committee. And, you know, as you mentioned, Jay is not a, he's a physical back, but he's not a, you know, he's not a big back. And so, you know, he runs with reckless abandon, and, you know, this gives him depth at the position. It spreads the carries out. And I think it's, like I said, I think it's a good move for Ajayi. I think it's a good move for the Dolphins, and I think it's a good move for Arian Foster.
Before we get on to the franchise tag stories, Jeff, one that caught my eye was Charles Tillman retiring after 13 seasons. I saw that this morning on the train on the way in. He was one of my favorites. I got to spend some time with him before the Bears came over and played at Wembley Stadium against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Just a great leader, great guy you'd want in your locker room. And, you know, he was an all-pro, Jeff. He was a pro bowler. I don't think he's going to be anywhere close to the Hall of Fame, but he had a unique skill set. He forced 44 fumbles during his career. I mean, it was just something he was so good at, just punching that ball out, the peanut punch, they called it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Players have great respect and communicate, you know, it's almost like they're in a society of their own. The other day we were standing on the sidelines of practice, and a couple of our guys had been on either the Bears or, you know, they'd been around Peanut during his career, and they talked about how uncanny that skill he had to punch the ball out. And they said he could do it at any time he wanted, even in practice. Guy'd run by him with the ball, and he just had that ability to get his hand in there and knock the ball out. And you think about that many at the cornerback position, causing that many fumbles in your career is just a phenomenal, phenomenal thing. And like I said, it was really cool the other day to listen to the guys talk about, you know, what great respect they had for him and his unique, you know, that peanut punch, as you call it.
Well, he had only, during his time in the NFL, Jeff, only Robert Mathis forced more fumbles. And you kind of think, well, that's what a pass rusher might do, you know, if he's hitting the quarterback as he's throwing, that kind of thing. In terms of fumbles forced, the next closest defensive back was Charles Woodson, and he had less than half of what Charles Tillman had. So, I mean, I don't think they're in the same league in terms of, you know, in terms of their entire career. But for a certain skill and a unique skill, Charles Tillman was top of the pile.
Yeah, and when he was with the Bears, when he was playing at the peak of his career, that was the thing that the Bears did better than anything else, was force turnovers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of became an identity thing. And it was fun to watch him. And he had such a, you know, impact on the game, such an impact player in Chicago. And really was, for everything that I've ever heard about the guy, was a great guy in the locker room, too.
Yeah, he was an NFL Man of the Year. Jeff, I think last year kind of summed him up. He was contributing with the Carolina Panthers, so he was still playing a key role for them. Then he partially tears his ACL, comes back for the final 3 weeks of the season, clearly not healthy, but that's kind of the player he was. And then he fully tore that ACL, and I think he kind of saw the end of the road. But he was one of those, I guess, like an old prize fighter. You know, he was going to go out swinging, and he was going to go out. He was going to go out playing the game he loved.
Well, he was going to go out punching. He was going to go out with the peanut punch. And, you know, you celebrate these guys, and when they, you know, Father Time gets all of us, and you know, nobody escapes it. And but it's great to see him go out, you know, as highly respected as he was, and really at the, maybe not the top of his game, but certainly still, as you say, a contributing factor on a championship team in Carolina.
Let's take a look at some of these franchise tag deals then, because Von Miller is now the highest paid defensive player in the NFL. So here are the numbers. 6 years, $115 million. $70 million of that is fully guaranteed within the first 3 years of the contract. He's the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL. He's had 60 sacks in his first 5 seasons. An incredible playoff run last year. 5 sacks. 2 forced fumbles, including one that led to the first touchdown in the Super Bowl, and an interception. Jeff, this was turning nasty for a while. He was cropping out photos of John Elway at the White House. There were serious worries that, you know, Elway is a tough negotiator and wasn't gonna give Von Miller what he wanted. There were reports that Denver were offering only $40 million. In guaranteed money. But I guess at the end of the day, with all the other question marks surrounding the Super Bowl champs, Elway kind of caved or saw common sense and realized that the inevitable was going to happen and that he was going to have to pay Von Miller, who again, like Joe Flacco did, is cashing in at the right time. Whether you say he's the best defensive player in the NFL, he's now the highest paid. It looks like Elway kind of realized that they had to get this deal done.
I agree. You know, this was a game of chicken that, you know, Vaughn seemed very comfortable to play. Mm. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, Neil, and this is the thing that you come to understand in the game, in the pro game, is that the players are in control. And once the market, once the value gets set, once the bar is set in terms of, you know, what the best players in the league should get, it's never going to go down. It's only going to go up. And you can argue whether Miller's a better player than J.J. Watt or should get more money than J.J. Watt. And that makes that's kind of the fun stuff to talk about. Mm. But the reality of it is the next big contract is going to be bigger than Von Miller. So That's the economics of the NFL, and that's just the way it works. I agree with you. I think Elway was in a really tough spot. He was in a really tough spot from a standpoint of keeping his football team together, and he was in a, you know, in the public persona, the public, you know, kind of image, and you know, what's he doing with the Broncos? The Broncos are, you know, falling apart. They're losing the quarterback. They're losing this guy. They're losing that guy. You know, I think this was a deal that he really had to make to get some positive energy going in Denver this offseason.
Yeah, and I think, Jeff, if we move on to the Jets, I think they had to do the same thing with Muhammad Wilkerson, because this was a player who's always shown up for them in terms of the way he plays on the field. He was, you know, he's a constant, he's a menace, he's a, you know, great interior rusher, everything. The Jets signed him to a 5-year, $85 million contract. But I was worried that if they weren't going to pay Muhammad Wilkerson, but they was going to pay Sheldon Richardson, who's had a few issues away from the field recently, that kind of sends the wrong message to the team. But the Jets did get this deal done with their key defender. Now, I guess we're just still, again, here we are now, almost in August. We're still waiting on this Ryan Fitzpatrick thing. What did you make of Wilkerson and everything else that's going on at the Jets?
Well, Wilkerson was, again, a little bit like Von Miller in that, you know, he's the heart and soul guy of that defensive line, and he's been a loyal guy. He's been, you know, a guy that's wanted to, you know, wants to finish his career in with the Jets. So many reasons for it to make sense and to get it done. So I, you know, I, you know, congratulate McKagan and the guys at the Jets for bringing him under contract and long term and all the stability things and leadership and all of that's real positive. I'm really, really leery of what's going on with the Fitzpatrick deal because that started to get, you know, prickly a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I just think that if the Jets think that they can be a playoff team with Geno Smith, I just think that's an awful tall ask. And then on the other hand, you know, Fitzpatrick has got to remember he's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right.
He's not Tom Brady. He's not Aaron Rodgers. But again, these guys understand it's supply and demand economics, particularly at quarterback. And, you know, there's a very, very, very high demand and a very small supply. And right now, he knows he's got it in his place.
And I think Fitzpatrick understands he's not Tom Brady, though, doesn't he, Jeff? I don't think what he's asking for, I think he's asking for kind of middle-of-the-road starter's money, and what the Jets want to pay him is backup money.
Well, yeah, but again, I think that this is one of those ones that has I don't see how it can go good, Neil. I really don't, because if they sign him, and imagine the pressure that's going to be on him to produce in that New York. You know the New York market.
Yeah.
Right now, you know, he's getting played. You know, the media's playing him as a selfish guy, and then they're, you know, playing the Jets as selfish. And now, you know, if he signs, then he's got to be the guy, and he can't have a bad game. And they'll bring up the playoff loss and, you know, the mm-hmm. Buffalo game at the end of the year where they had a chance to go to the playoffs and he stunk it up. And if he doesn't sign, then the Jets are, what are you doing? You know Geno Smith, Geno's not the guy. I mean, it's just, I think this one has a chance to be a really ugly one. And it needs to get done, and it needs to get done soon, and the Jets need to move on. This is a team that has a chance to make some hay in that AFC East. The Patriots have, you know, their issues. Here's an opportunity for a team that was right at the brink of a playoff spot last year to take another step, and I think it would be just a calamity for Fitzpatrick not to sign back. I think this is a deal they've got to do.
Yeah, reports suggest it might go into the preseason, which means we are, you know, at least another 3 weeks away from something getting done. You sense there's some panic there from the locker room, Jeff. You know, Brandon Marshall's been speaking quite a bit about this. You know, it's starting to scare me that I'm not hearing back from Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, when you think about it from a Brandon Marshall point of view, who's played a long time in the NFL, and as he told me last year, he just wants to win. You know, players will get very selfish about this, Jeff, and say, well, I want what offers me the best chance to win. And if everyone remembers what Geno Smith was like, he does not offer this team the best chance to be a playoff contender this year, in my opinion.
In everybody's opinion, and certainly in Brandon Marshall's opinion, or you wouldn't make those kind of public statements. I mean, that when you come out and make that statement, what are you saying about Geno Smith?
Mm.
You know, you don't even have to use Geno's name, but what you're saying is what we got isn't good enough. We need Ryan Fitzpatrick back if we're going to win, and that's one of your, you know, that's one of your stars coming out publicly now, and that puts more pressure on the Jets because now, you know, public perception is going to be that they don't, you know, they're not listening to their football team. And, you know, I just think this, like you said, this has a chance to be something that's going to be a huge distraction in training camp, something Todd Bowles is going to have to deal with. I'm sure he's right now circling the wagons a little bit on the phone with his players about, you know, we got to come into this camp and give Geno our full support until we can get Ryan done. And, you know, it's the kind of stuff that we deal with on a daily basis in this business. But, you know, it has big implications, I'm telling you, in New York.
Moving on to other franchise tag news. Justin Tucker signed a long-term deal as the kicker of the Baltimore Ravens, but there were no deals for Eric Berry at the Chiefs, Kirk Cousins with Washington, or Alshon Jeffrey with the Chicago Bears. Eric Berry had some funny clause in his contract where it was about sort of a medical thing in there that made the Chiefs the beneficiary of the contract. He didn't like that, but I know from talking to Kirk Cousins, Jeff, and the way he feels about, you know, his play and his form, he's quite happy to gamble on himself this year. And if he has a big season and Alshon Jeffrey could have a big season, they either get rewarded by the team they're with, or they're going to hit the open market and make the kind of money that they haven't made this year. But they're making, what, the average of the top five players in their position for this season. So they're perfectly happy to gamble on themselves.
It's a great move by Cousins. Because, you know, you think about it, Neil, he's going to get top five money now, right? And he has the ability to, as you say, if you want to say, bet on himself or you know, wager on his own abilities. You know, quarterbacks, the desire for quarterbacks, the need for quarterbacks in the league is not going to go down next year. It's only going to get more, more intense. And so when you are a quarterback and you're a quarterback who's proven you can take a team to the playoffs, then your value is going to be, you know, much higher next year, particularly if you can string together another good season. And there are all indications in Washington that the Redskins should have a dynamic offense. And Cousins, if he, you know, again, if he can continue to grow and take another step, not only will Washington have to pay an awful lot of money to keep him, he becomes an extremely valuable commodity in the free agent market.
Yeah, well, you look at, we've talked about this last year, Jeff. Case Keenum was starting games, Jimmy Clausen, Austin Davis. I mean, there aren't enough good quarterbacks to go around. So, you know, Kirk is, he can bide his time. And I like his, you can sense it. I've spent time with him. You get around him. You know, confidence is a big thing. And he has grown in confidence. Second half of last season, through this off season, he feels like he's the man in Washington. And I think he's going to play that way.
I don't think there's any question. It's his team now in Washington, and he's Gruden's guy. And when all of those, with all those factors, you know, going with the talent around him, and I just think that he's making a great, great decision. Be a positive guy. Be positive in the media. Be positive with your teammates. Have a great season, and then you cash the, you know, you cash in. You know, the big slot machine in the sky is going to bring it out for you.
Well, I sent a couple of prayers up towards the sky, Jeff, and they've been answered because I've got my Twitter back up. So we can do some mailbag questions if you want to get into it.
All right, man. Let's do it.
Perfect timing. John Sands says, the Dolphins now have Cameron Wake and Arian Foster coming back from the Achilles injury. In your experience, is this the worst to try and come back from? So Achilles or... I guess, well, knee injuries, and we have neck injuries that end careers. But, Jeff, we see torn ACLs or we see Achilles. What do you make of the Achilles injury to come back from that?
Well, an Achilles is tough. There's no question about it. But it's one that can be done. I just don't – to me, the knee is always the one that is the worst one to me. You know, you get the what they call the unhappy triad, the ACL, PCL, MCL. Those are devastating. But, you know, when you just talk about injuries, the way that these guys are able to come back now compared to even 5, 10 years ago, Neil, is amazing. The advances in the surgery techniques, the advances in the rehab, the, you know, just all the attention these guys are able to get and all the medical services available to them. I, you know, it's not like the old days where a guy would get an Achilles or a guy would get a knee or you know, shoulder or whatever, and it's like, oh, well, he may never play again. You know, I think this is the game is as safe as it's ever been. I think the medical people are phenomenal that the NFL players have access to. You know, I saw something the other day about Jared Odrick, who comes up here to Toronto to train in the offseason.
Yes, he does.
You know, he spends $200,000 a year on himself in terms of nutritional diet, weightlifting, massage. I mean, it's unbelievable, but it's like he's trying to get other guys to understand you're only investing in your career when you do that. And he feels like he's playing the best football of his life, and part of that is because of what he's been able to do in the offseason and, you know, with taking care of his body. I mean, he's flying people from Toronto to Miami twice a year to, you know, give him these, you know, I don't even know what it is, some sort of crazy... almost like Chinese medicine treatments. And, you know, it's phenomenal what these guys do today to stay on the field.
He's been ripped off, Jeff. For 36 quid a month, he could have a body like mine. Just go to the gym. Sign up to the local gym.
it's a little bit more involved.
Is there a bit more to it? Is there a bit more to it than that?
You know, I was phenomenal article I read about what he's doing up here and how much time and money he spends. And but he's trying to change the mindset in the NFL. He talked about when he first came into the Dolphins, there was a sign in the training room that said, "Be a player, not a patient." And you know, there's kind of always been that thing from the organization and from coaches about stay out of the training room. You know, Parcells wouldn't even let the players. This is a true story. Parcells would not let the players go into the training room to get Q-tips. The Q-tips were kept outside. The only thing you went in the training room for with Bill Parcells was to get a treatment. You didn't go in there to talk. You didn't go in there to, you know, hang out. And, you know, like I said, he was crazy about it. You want aspirin? Aspirin. You want those separate. You want a Q-tip to clean your ears? Don't go in the training room for that kind of stuff. So that's Odrich's really trying to change that mentality and get these guys to understand taking care of your body is a, you know, 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, you know, 12-month-a-year job.
There have certainly been plenty of players in training rooms when I've tried to interview them, Jeff. That's always their get-out-of-jail-free card. Oh, he's in the training room. He can't do the interview today. Let's take another question for you. This one comes from Gary Pugh, who says, does it frustrate you as a coach when a player signs a big contract and all of a sudden becomes very loyal? Jeff, just before you answer that, it's interesting because sometimes when a player gets a big contract, we kind of look at them and say they're greedy or they're mercenary, but the amount of players you must have sat in your office and cut from professional football over the years, for the player to have a little bit of power every now and then is not a bad thing, in my opinion.
No, and it's just the business of the business. I mean, the reality is for these guys, their earning lifetime is in pro football is very, very short. I mean, very short. So you're talking about most guys, it's 5 years. You want to get to your second contract. Well, you know, that's not very long. And, yeah, they do make a lot of money. Yeah, but you know what? They're very specialized, very skilled individuals. Very few people in the world can do what they do at the level that they do it. So I don't begrudge, never have, and never will begrudge players the money that they – I think they earn every penny that they make. You got to see this game up close and personal. You got to be on the field and see the work that they put in and you know, how tough this game is on their bodies. And just, you know, again, I think it's a great thing that these guys are getting paid. I really do. And I think back to those old guys that, you know, used to play for $30,000 a year you know, the guys that are up in their 60s and, you know, 70s now that really built the game. Those are the guys that I feel for.
Yeah.
Because those are the ones that, you know, have the medical issues and all that. And I think the Players Association is really working hard to try and address that and take care of some of those old guys who really built the game.
Yeah, those are the guys you want, you know, a slice of Von Miller's contract going into a pot and then being shared out in terms of pensions to those old guys, pensions and medical stuff, don't you?
Absolutely. I think that move is something that we've got to continue to push for. And just there are too many guys that did too much and gave so much for this game that we need to look after them in their later years.
All right. Good. We've got another question, Jeff. I'll take this one, actually. It's from Andrew Black, who said, why didn't me or any of my mates get a ticket for either of the recent London fan nights? And then there's an angry emoji face. Andrew, we had 10,000 ticket applications and we had room for 400 fans on each of those evenings. But we are aware of the outstanding response and interest from fans. So we're looking at bigger venues. And certainly all I can say is please keep trying. And we're sorry we couldn't get you into them this time. Let's take a question for you, Jeff. It's a very simple one, actually. Michael Boynton says, well, I know what your answer would be, Jeff, because you're a 3-4 guy, but 4-3 or 3-4 defense in the current NFL?
I get this question a lot, and I just really believe that the 3-4, because of the multiple ways that you can adjust it, all the things you can do with it, you know, that the specialty players that you can find now, those, like you said, the edge guys, the Von Millers, the ones that can rush and drop, you know, DeMarcus Ware on the other side. That's why, you want to know why Denver was so good on defense. It was those two guys and how they fit in Wade's 3-4 system and how he can use them in the 3-4 system. You can line them up all over the place. They can attack from any, you know, any angle. You know, when you go back and study, and I did an off-season study of the Broncos, it's phenomenal what they do with those guys. They've got them moved all over the place. You got to constantly find them. In the 4-3, it's tougher to do that. The right end, left end, right tackle, left tackle. You know, and one of the things that slows offensive linemen down is when they have to think. And, you know, that's just the way it is. You can't play fast when you're thinking. And when you have to find those guys and they're moving all over the place and here he is in one down, then he's over there, and how do we move the protection? And they just create so much havoc. And I think that's why I'm a 3-4 guy.
All right, one more question, Jeff, to finish off this week, and it comes from Tom Marshall, and it's back to the franchise tag sort of situation. He said, will we ever see a player like Von Miller resist the franchise tag and sit out a year to get to true free agency? Well, obviously, Miller didn't need to do that. There was negotiations that got the deal done, but it was part of the conversation, Jeff, leading up to the deadline was, you know, does Von Miller force Denver's hand? And the only way he can do that is to sit out. But then I think you've got to think, yes, there's a long-term benefit to that, but there's also, you know, there's also you have a limited amount of time, as you've said, when you are a professional footballer. And for Von Miller to do that, you're pretty much saying, in order to do that and guarantee a long-term future for the next year, we need you to walk away from $16 million guaranteed. We need you to walk away from $1 million that we're going to pay into your paycheck every week of the regular season. I think that's quite a lot to ask for players. And also, as we've said with Kirk Cousins, they're being rewarded in the now. They just then have to go back and test the market again a year later. The last person to do it, Jeff, incidentally, was Sean Gilbert, Darrell Revis's uncle. It was in the 1990s with the Carolina Panthers, early 90s. So it's been a while before anyone's done that.
Well, obviously there's the economic pressure to sign on the player. But I think if you look at it, you know, it's going to take a special kind of guy, right? Mm-hmm. Not only a superstar player that would know that his value won't go down if he doesn't play, but you're also going to have to, it's going to have to be a guy that's an independent thinker enough. That's why I thought there was a chance that Vaughn would do that, that he would walk away, because he's a guy that, you know, he marches to his own drum now. And how many NFL players tell you at the end of their career they want to go down to Texas and own a chicken farm? I mean, those kind of guys aren't in the NFL very much. And he's, you know, he's one of those guys. I could see Michael Bennett do it. Those kinds of guys, independent thinkers, guys that, you know, have their own kind of, like I say, march to their own tune. But that's the kind of personality it's going to take. And you've got to be a good enough player that you know that the demand for your skills will be there in another 10 months.
Mm. I just had this image now of, you remember the first Rocky film where Rocky Balboa is chasing chickens around? I've got that image. But I think Von Miller would catch them.
You know, he might. You know, it's funny. It's crazy you say that. You know, we were having a talk yesterday. We were just, you know, talking in a defensive staff meeting. We were talking about a player who had done really well at the combine in the short shuttle, right? And he has struggles in making plays in space, right? Which doesn't translate. You'd think the short shuttle, which is supposed to be short burst quickness, would translate into a guy that can make plays in space. Hmm. But he can't. He just can't do it. And we were laughing and saying that what we ought to do to replace the short shuttle in the combine is do that Rocky Balboa thing where Mick the trainer makes him chase the chicken in the alley, and we'll find out who can really.
That'd be brilliant. Then Rich Eisen will try and do it in his suit.
Yeah, how about that? Yo, go in the alley. When you can get the chicken, then you're ready, Rock.
And that, with you doing Mickey impressions, is a perfect place to end, I think, Jeff. Who have you got this week? What's on your slate for the Ticats?
We're 2-2. We had a huge win last week. We, if you can believe this, Neil, we were ahead at halftime 5-4. It was like it was like, who's pitching the ninth inning?
Yeah.
I mean, it was some bad football in the first half. It was great defensive football. But then Speedy Banks broke an 86-yard punt return in the third quarter, which really got us going. And then we ended up winning 31-7. And that's a huge win on the road. So we have got to go on the road again to defending Grey Cup champion Edmonton Eskimos at their place on Saturday. So it doesn't get any easier in pro football.
That Brandon Banks keeps making you look like a great coach, Jeff.
I tell you what, it's amazing how when you got great players, you can be a pretty good football coach. But you know what? Here's the amazing thing about that kid. He's played 41 games in the CSL. He's returned 9 kicks for touchdown in 41 games. Now, the guy who holds the all-time CFL record was a guy named Henry Gizmo Williams. Philadelphia Eagle fans will remember he played for the Eagles for a while. Henry returned 32 for touchdown over his career, but it took him 14 years to do it. Brandon Banks has 9 in 41 games. It's like one every 4 games he takes back. That's an unbelievable, unbelievable number. And Redskin fans who remember him when he was down there, you know what kind of threat he is when he gets that ball in his hand.
Mm. Jeff, it's like 6 degrees of separation. I remember watching Gizmo Williams at Wembley Stadium, 89. It was Cleveland against Philadelphia. And he scored a touchdown at Wembley Stadium. Then he did a backflip in the end zone. And, he ended up going to the CFL after that.
You know what? It was Buddy cut him. And after one of those episodes, he scored a touchdown to the backflip. Buddy walked over to him and said, "Hey, kid, this is the National Football League. It's not that beer league up in Canada."
Excellent. Why is Brandon Banks? I mean, I every time I talk to you or I follow your stuff online and I see he's made another big play. Why is he not getting a look? Do you think he'll ever get a look in the NFL again? Why do you think he hasn't in the last couple of years?
Well, I think what's happened to him is there's another kid up here named Stephon Logan who was a great returner for the Lions for a couple of years, you know, Pro Bowl caliber returner for the Lions for a couple of years. What happens, they're both the same guy. Brandon only weighs 148 pounds. Now, people can't even imagine that, a pro football player, 148. He's 148 pounds. Logan's about 155, 160. They're so small, and their shelf life in that league is not very big, you know. And because they're so small, they can bring limited things to the team other than return. So it's really tough for, you know, those little returners. You know, I'm talking about small guys. Historically, they can have a couple good years, but it's hard to have it for a long time over your career. So I think what happens is they get to the point where they start making enough money and they get too expensive and they're too, you know, they're too fragile, and teams decide they have to move on, you know. And Brandon made great play. I mean, he did some great things with the Redskins, great things, but he was never going to be a receiver for him, and it's too expensive to keep him as a returner in a roster spot. The way the punters in the NFL, the rules in the NFL, they can mitigate those kinds of guys, you know, because hit it up there, make them fair catch it, kick it out of the end zone on kickoffs, and all of a sudden you can take him out of the game. Can't do that up here because every ball has to be returned.
Right.
There's no fair catches.
And bigger field.
You know, so on a bigger field, and so these guys have a chance to really be impactful players up here.
All right, Jeff, we're out. Your coffee shop's open.
It is, and I've got a big mug of black coffee sitting right in front of me. I'm ready to go.
Crikey, you didn't hang about, did you?
Good. I get a chance to talk ball with you, drink coffee, and go to football practice all on the same day. You all can't get any better.
There you go. You've hit the trifecta. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. Until next week, when we'll talk more about the NFL, and we'll be right on the eve of those training camps opening. So we'll have lots of training camp chat for you next week. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.